The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Aversion is one of three things that the Buddha actually pointed to. He said, these are three things that we need to pay attention to in our minds, in our lives. These three things, he said, seem to really catch us. They cause us struggle. And these three things are greed, aversion, and delusion. So tonight I'd like to explore the aversion side of the equation. You know, greed tends to arise out of wanting something pleasant, wanting something to continue. Aversion tends to arise when there's something unpleasant in our experience. We want to get rid of something, to push something away. We want to fix it, to change it, to escape. So this aversion actually often manifests as there's so many different ways it manifests, but there's kind of two basic flavors. There's a flavor where it's kind of an outward flavor of lashing out against things, a flavor of anger, you know, that we want to get rid of something, we want to push it away. It's kind of an active outward kind of energy. So there's something out there unpleasant, and it's like, I got to get rid of that, I got to get it out of my environment. The other flavor or main flavor of aversion is what it's an inward flavor or a pulling back flavor rather than a lashing out flavor. It's the flavor of not I want to get rid of that thing. It's I need to get out of here. So it's got the fear component to it, the anxiety, the fear side of it. So those are kind of the two basic ways that aversion manifests when there's something unpleasant in our environment. If we want to get rid of it, either we want to get it out of our environment to control, to fix, to change the thing, or we want to get ourselves out of the environment. It can be helpful to have a sense of just the variety of kinds of aversion that exist. So just, I want to give you kind of a broad view of the terrain by naming many of the flavors of aversion. And this first list are ones that when I created this list, they are ones that I, in particular, have a lot of familiarity with. Fear, anger, bitterness, resentment, hostility, dislike, rage, irritation, annoyance, worry, hatred, distrust, cruelty, discontent, frustration, aversion, dissatisfaction, loneliness. So you see from that there's all kinds of ways, flavors that it manifests, and a variety of ranges that it manifests in, you know, from the subtle irritation or annoyance to hatred and cruelty to rage. Then I went to the thesaurus, and I got a whole bunch more. Loathing, disapproval, disgust, fury, disrespect, disparagement, contempt, humiliation, unkindness, meanness, spitefulness, disdain, disquiet, anxiety, apprehension, dread, distress. So there's many different kind of moods or emotions that qualify as this aversive mind state. And we're all really familiar with these. Sometimes aversion can feel out of place in our spiritual lives. It's like when aversion is present, it's like kind of like your question. It's like, don't I have to get rid of that? Don't I have to get over that before I start to practice? So that we have this sense of it not kind of fitting in. We think we have to get rid of the aversion in order to settle down. But our path actually unfolds by actually being willing to meet aversion. When aversion is happening, it is our direction of spiritual growth. We purify our minds, we purify the aversion by actually being willing to meet it, to open to it. The non-reactive recognition of aversion is actually our path. And so, for me, this was actually a huge insight, finally, when after a very long time of practice and meeting so much aversion in my mind, I finally began to recognize it didn't matter that aversion was coming up. That is the path. That's what is happening right now that I need to be paying attention to. When aversion is arising in our minds and we turn our attention to that, we are meeting ourselves. We're learning something about ourselves. So I want to explore what it means to actually meet aversion, to understand aversion, as opposed to be caught by it and believe in it. This is a key piece, I think, that when something's happening like anger or frustration or irritation, we often believe the anger or frustration or irritation. We think something has to happen. Either we need to get rid of the thing in the environment or we need to get ourselves out of the environment. We believe that that aversion has to be acted on in order for us to be okay. The path of meditation and mindfulness unfolds through seeing if it's possible to actually turn towards the aversion itself, rather than having our attention on the thing we're averse to. Turn towards the experience. What does it feel like? What does it mean to be aware of aversion in my experience? So there's different aspects of aversion. There's thoughts that are accompanying aversion. There's a feeling often in the mind, kind of a mood or an emotion, a sense of kind of that basic, you know, lash out or pull back kind of feeling. There's often an unpleasant feeling associated with aversion. Then there's bodily experience that's also associated with aversion. And the various flavors of aversion that I mentioned will have different ways they feel, different things, thoughts they produce. And so it can be interesting to begin to look at four various flavors of aversion, what are the signs? So again, this is turning towards the aversion itself. It's getting interested in what kinds of thoughts does this state produce? How does it make the body feel? How does it impact the mind? So for example, just a couple of examples, the two basic flavors of anger and fear. So anger has the basic stories, something along the lines of you shouldn't have done that, or you've done me wrong, I'm right, you're wrong. That kind of story plays in the mind. So those are the thoughts that are associated with anger. And you may know your own. I mean, as I go through this, see if you can recognize for yourself what's your, you know, the basic story of anger in your own mind. The feeling generally is unpleasant, although we may not notice that. If we are focused outward on the thing in the environment, getting rid of the thing in the environment, somehow controlling or manipulating or one-upping the person, you know, whatever our favorite way of working with anger in our situation is, if we're focused outwards, we may not notice that it doesn't feel very good to be angry. It was quite a revelation for me when I actually recognized that. You know, that there's a an analogy in the Buddha's teachings that anger is kind of like picking up a hot coal in order to throw at somebody. You know, you're picking up the hot coal with the intention of throwing it to hurt them. But you burn yourself first. But our minds are so deluded that sometimes we don't even recognize that we're burning ourselves first. We're so focused on wanting to hurt the other person. At least what it was for me when I was exploring anger initially. It was like, oh my gosh, this actually hurts me. You know, it got kind of obvious for me when I was exploring anger initially, because the person that I was really angry with was 7,000 miles away. And so there was a belief in there that anger would somehow like hurt him, but it was pretty clear it wasn't doing anything to him because he didn't even know I was angry, you know. He was 7,000 miles away. So I could begin to really touch into the fact that, yes, this is unpleasant, this experience. The anger itself does not conduce to well-being in my experience. So that unpleasant feeling, that feeling of lashing out, is part of this feeling of anger. Then in the body, the feeling in the body can be pressure, heat, you know, just a feeling of rising of pressure in the body, and perhaps a flushing of heat through the body. So again, thinking for yourself, what does anger feel like in your body? Maybe some tightening in the stomach, clenching of the jaw, clenching of the hands. You may notice that your body responds when you're angry. Fear. Fear has a flavor. The thoughts around fear, something around like, what if this thing happens? What if this bad thing happens? Or just playing, projecting into the future and not being okay with what you've projected into the future. So often fear has to do with something in the future. It's got a story about the future. It's not going to be okay in the future. Fear can also be pre-verbal and not actually have much of a story. So sometimes you may not actually see the thoughts around fear. It can just be this visceral sense of, get me out of here. The feeling also is unpleasant, usually, feeling of wanting to push back or retreat. And again, the body responds to fear. Again, there can be, the heart can race, there can be contraction in the throat, a feeling of agitation, anxiousness through the body. So, looking at your various flavors of aversion and seeing if you can begin to recognize, how is it for you? How does it impact your mind and body to have that experience? This is the basic attending to aversion, bringing our attention, bringing mindfulness to the aversion. It's taking the attention out of the thing that you're averse to and turning towards that experience itself, turning towards the feeling of aversion itself. And so with physical discomfort, there's the physical discomfort itself, and then there's reaction to it. Sometimes with physical discomfort, there's something we can do about it. You know, if you're in a situation, you know, I cut myself with a knife, there's physical discomfort about that. You know, it's not just that I sit there and go, oh, bleeding, bleeding, bleeding is happening. You know, it's like I got myself to the emergency room and I got it, you know, stitched up. You know, so sometimes we, with unpleasant situations, unpleasant experience, we take action. We do something to take care of the unpleasant experience. Being a mindfulness practitioner doesn't simply mean that you sit there with all unpleasant experience and don't take action. We need to use some discernment about that. Sometimes unpleasant experience, there's not much we can do about it. You know, that it's a chronic pain or something that's happening in your body that's producing discomfort. And, you know, maybe you ate too much food, right? And your stomach's all bloated and there's a lot of gas and a lot of pain in there. It's like, well, perhaps you shouldn't have eaten as much food, but there's no point in this point berating yourself, telling yourself I shouldn't have eaten so much food, because these are the conditions you're dealing with now. And just meeting the feelings. Just meeting the feelings and any aversion to it. So typically when we do have aversive experience, unpleasant experience in our bodies, there is often aversive reaction to it. We don't like it. And especially when we don't have control over it, we really don't like it. We rebel even more when we don't have control over it. And that is exactly the time when that that rebelling, when we don't have control, it really spirals on itself, because the reactivity to unpleasant situation, the aversion to that unpleasant situation, is itself unpleasant, and it tends to compound the suffering. So if you are experiencing some unpleasantness in the body, and then you're reacting to that, that reaction can tend to tighten the body, which may exacerbate the unpleasant feelings, which then exacerbates the reactivity, which then exacerbates the unpleasant feelings, and it just spirals, it loops on itself. So part of the exploration here is, can you recognize, okay, there's unpleasant experience here, and there's reactivity to it. So noticing that there is the unpleasant experience and that I don't like it. I want to get rid of it. So that our initial thought might be that what it means to practice with discomfort in the body might mean that, oh, I just know that there's discomfort without any reactivity. That would be what being mindful in that situation would be. But what it often means is that we recognize there's discomfort in the body and there's reactivity. There's discomfort in the body and I don't like it. If we're trying to pay attention to the discomfort in the body while being reactive to it, generally that just feeds the reactivity. It's like if you pay attention to something that you're reactive to, again, that's like putting your attention in the thing that you're reacting to. Generally, it fuels the reaction. So the practice is to turn instead to the reaction itself. So there is the discomfort in the body and there's not liking. Maybe it's more than not liking. Maybe it's anxiety or fear or dread. Can you distinguish between, this is part of the skill that we cultivate with meditation, can you distinguish between the thing that's causing the reaction, whether it's a situation out in the world, a boss that's said something that you felt was cruel or hurtful, or whether it's in the body? Can you acknowledge there's a distinction between that thing that you don't like and the not liking itself, or the fear, or the anxiety, or the dread, or the discomfort, or the dissatisfaction? Can you notice that difference? And then see if you can acknowledge, yeah, anxiety is happening right now. Fear is happening right now. And how does that impact the body? What are the stories it tells? I'm not going to be okay unless I change this thing. I'm not going to be okay unless I get myself out of here. Those kinds of stories that it tells. The stories tend to fuel the feeling itself. If you can take your attention out of the stories, just simply recognize, okay, yeah, those are aversion stories. Those are aversion stories that are happening in my mind, as opposed to believing them, as opposed to following through on them. If you can recognize, okay, yeah, those are aversion stories, and how does this feeling of aversion land in my body? So turning the attention from the thoughts to the feeling in the body often is a very helpful tool for working with aversion. So as we attend to aversion in this way, we begin to recognize the unpleasantness of aversion itself, as I mentioned before. You know, that aversion itself doesn't feel very good. Why would we do that? When I first heard the instruction, rather than acting on your anger, turn your attention to your anger instead. Or rather than focusing outward on the thing that you're angry with, turn your attention to the feeling of anger. I thought, well, what good is that going to do? You know, why? Isn't that just going to make it worse? To my surprise, when I tried it, it didn't actually make it worse. Because you're taking the fuel out of the thing that you're averse to, you're turning to the feeling of aversion itself. It doesn't fuel the aversion, but you do get to feel the unpleasantness of aversion itself. And that, why would we want to do that? A couple of reasons. Actually, I have a list of, I think, 4 or 5 reasons why we might want to do this, why we might want to turn to attend to aversion instead of attending to getting rid of or fixing or changing or getting ourselves out of the situation. So the kind of suffering that we experience when we turn our attention to the aversion, well, first of all, we're actually acknowledging the truth that's happening for ourselves in the moment, the difficulty, the feeling of the unpleasantness that's happening in the moment. We're acknowledging that. And that kind of unpleasantness, that kind of discomfort it's a discomfort that begins to educate our minds that aversion is not a state that heads us into well-being. We directly in the moment experience the non-well-beingness of aversion. Aversion has convinced us that if we act on it, that we'll find our way to well-being, that if we just get rid of that thing, if we just fix that thing, change that thing, just get myself out of here, then well-being will follow. And to some extent, we've learned that, yes, when I do act on it, I get this moment of, I fixed it, I changed it, I'm in control, I've got this. But we have actually just cemented the view, the belief that we can control the world and be happy by controlling, fixing, changing. And it's actually, we don't have a lot of control over what happens to us, over our lives, over the unfolding of things. You know, we think we do, but largely we're kind of wandering through a bunch of causes and conditions, and what unfolds in our lives is largely out of our control. We can make these little changes, these little tweaks here and there, and have a moment or two of feeling, oh, yeah, I've figured that out, I've fixed that, I've changed that. But then, very rapidly, the situation changes, and there's yet another situation where we either have to fix it or change it or hold on to something or get rid of something or get ourselves out of here. Okay, I got to do it again. We do it. We get that moment of relief, and then it changes again, and I got to do it again. Okay. We don't seem to get the idea that we've gotten ourselves into a kind of a hamster wheel of needing to fix to change. So the Buddha actually suggested that if we turn towards this aversion rather than acting on it, now again, with the caveat that there are times when there's something unpleasant happening, taking action is skillful, like when I cut my finger, you know, needing to go and get it stitched up. But there's a lot of times when we act on aversion when it's not that kind of thing, where it's kind of more just that we want to feel a little more comfortable. We don't like it this way, we want it that way. So if we can turn towards that feeling of aversion, watch it, get to know it, we begin to recognize, first of all, that within that experience of aversion itself is non-well-being. That the experience of aversion itself is not conducive to feeling happy. And if we can hang out with it, one of the great joys, actually, of meditation is hanging out with something that's difficult like that. Hanging out in the space of wanting something to go away, noticing the aversion, recognizing, you know, maybe you're sitting with discomfort for a while and noticing the aversion around that discomfort, and then suddenly the aversion falls away, and it's just the discomfort for a while. It's just the uncomfortable sensation in the body, and the aversion is gone. And you see just how much extra suffering was added by having that aversion in the mix. That begins to give you the understanding of how turning towards the aversion leads us. It's kind of like the suffering that leads to the end of suffering. As we turn towards aversion and explore what it is in our experience. It's not a pleasant experience, and it's not pleasant to do that. But we begin to get a sense that it is a more helpful thing to do than trying to fix, to change, to get myself out of here, to hold on. So as we begin to turn towards aversion in this way, we may get a little bit of a space, you know, that we recognize, we may begin to recognize, oh, this is just anxiety that's happening. We lose a little bit of the sense of identification. This is my anxiety. I'm anxious. I need to fix this, change this. And it becomes just, oh, there's this uncomfortable situation and there's anxiety. So there can be a little bit of a space that happens around the experience of aversion. And that space gives us, again, that sense of a little bit of well-being, the possibility, or we get a sense of the direction of well-being, having that space around the aversion. As we turn towards aversion, this is a big piece, I think, as we turn towards the aversion as opposed to acting out of it. A few minutes ago, I talked about how anger feeds anger or fear feeds fear, that if we act on the thoughts of anger, it tends to perpetuate the anger, escalate the anger. Boy, I sure saw that in spades when I first was exploring aversion. You know, it's like I was so angry at somebody, but if I caught the anger early in the process, if I noticed it with mindfulness, just as it was beginning, it didn't escalate. If it was even like 2 or 3 minutes before I noticed it, the mind had whipped itself up into a fury, into a rage. Really, really difficult, unpleasant experience when I finally woke up into that. So the fueling of the cycle with the observing of our aversion as we turn towards it, it seems to stem the fueling of that state. We also start to see that aversion is simply a process that's unfolding in our minds. It's actually an optional process. We don't think of it as being optional. We kind of think of the anxiety that comes around physical discomfort or the anger that comes when somebody says something cruel to us or mean to us. We think of it as just being an automatic thing. You know, that it's not optional. It certainly doesn't feel optional some of the time. You know, it's just like, yeah, that happens. It's like that button gets pushed and anxiety is the result. Or the coworker says that thing and it's like they've pushed that button and anger is the result. But there's actually a process happening. And there's a sequence of events that unfolds. And fortunately for us, it is not automatic. It is not hardwired for us. It can be quite tightly wired. I mean, it can be quite tightly connected that we have these reactions, but it is not undoable. It is possible to begin to loosen the grip of that reactivity. And the things I've talked about so far, the turning towards, the seeing a little bit of space, those contribute, those help to loosen that connection. As we continue exploring aversion, we can begin to see just how this process, just how aversion unfolds in our minds, just how it's created. It's actually created right in the present moment. We think that we're kind of carrying around our difficult states, our frustration, our anxiety, our annoyance, our anger. I certainly felt that way about this anger that I was referring to earlier, the anger at this person 7,000 miles away. I felt like it was kind of a big ball of anger that was sitting there in my being. And every now and then it would be like I was normally kind of okay at kind of keeping it at bay, but every now and then it would like erupt. But what I began to recognize as I explored my anger, as I turned towards it, as I observed it, is that actually when anger erupts, it is actually being created in the moment. There is proclivity towards the creation of that state. It's kind of like there are grooves worn that are very easy to go down. But the grooves are not the anger themselves. The grooves themselves are not the anger. Falling into the groove, anger is created. So, you know, this might happen in... One of the ways that I've seen this happen over and over again is some thought appears in my mind. Some thought about, in this case, a thought about somebody that I was angry with appears in my mind. That thought itself is just a thought. It actually doesn't already come imbued with the baggage of the feelings. It's just a thought. And what happens in that moment, what I've seen happen actually, and this what I'm going to describe here sounds like, it may sound like something that, you know, you have, need to have done a lot of meditation experience to see this, but this happened to me within the first few months of my meditation practice, and it happened to me while I was chopping an apple in the kitchen. I wasn't even sitting on a cushion. So this is possible, this kind of seeing is possible just in our lives if we're interested, if we get interested in exploring the qualities of anger, aversion, fear. If we're willing to turn towards them and meet them, we begin to start to see the process by which it's created. And so seeing this thought arise in my mind, I saw actually that the thought that arose in my mind was connected to the fact that I was cutting an apple in my kitchen. The thought had to do with being with this person that I was angry at a fruit stand. So there was a connection. I could see that kind of cause and effect relationship between what I was doing and the memory that arose in my mind. Then I saw, the next thing I saw in my mind was a kind of an inclination to... So there was this thought of this person in my mind that I had a history of anger with. And there was it was like an inclination to jump on that thought and think more thoughts in order to get angry at that person. Kind of like the inclination to jump right into that rut. That was what I felt, that, yeah, I want to jump into that rut and get angry. Now, I had fortunately been spending a lot of time exploring my anger. And The thing that I had learned in spades over the course of a couple of months before that I had been observing anger, turning towards anger, feeling the anger in my body, noticing how uncomfortable it was, the thing that I learned in spades is that anger is suffering. The experience of anger itself is suffering. And so when my mind actually saw it inclining towards, yeah, let's get angry at this person, the mind knew in that moment, that way lies suffering. The mind itself let go. I didn't even have to say, oh, I don't want to go there. I don't think I should try to let go of that thought. It was kind of like the way your hand recoils from a hot pot on the stove. It just automatically knows that's going to burn. When my mind saw itself headed towards, yeah, let's get angry at this person, it was like, yeah, and that way lies being burned. Whew. And it dropped it. So this kind of experience really showed me how when anger arises, it's coming up in the moment. In that moment, the mind let go. It did not create the anger. I actually stood there in my kitchen waiting for anger to arise, because having this person in my mind and not having anger arise in my mind was not something that I had experience with in quite a long time. But anger did not arise. And at that point, I really recognized the value of the practice, really recognized the value of turning towards anger. In my entire being, I knew this is a path. This is a path that leads to happiness, this turning towards, this witnessing, this watching. And this witnessing of experience begins to point out to us how our mind creates aversion in our own minds. It often comes off of some kind of thought or other, very often as a reaction to a thought that's flitted through our mind. The thought flits through and we react to the thought. And then we get caught in the reaction. So as we can begin to see this process, begin to see the cycle of thoughts, I mean, it's the cycle of reactivity, wherever we break into it with mindfulness, that's what we bring our attention to. If we're already caught in the anger or the frustration or the hatred or the fear, anxiety or dread, if we're already caught there, okay, what is dread like? What is fear like? It actually doesn't take very long of committing yourself to looking at this before you begin to realize the benefits of it. I feel like I'm having to cheerlead you here a little bit now, because it's like, why do this? You know, I definitely was like, I had hit bottom, actually. It's kind of like, I didn't see how this would help, but I was willing to try because I didn't see anything else that was going to work either. I was like, okay, I'll see if this will work. And relatively quickly, I saw the benefits. I understood, yes, this is helpful. So I want to leave a few minutes for some questions or comments. I always have more to say, but I'm going to leave it there for now. So see if there's anything. Yeah.
I was just visiting my parents, and it was part of what I'm trying to do as a loving kindness practice, just be with them and let them talk to me. And it was going really well, and I thought, you know, I just was really feeling good. And until I just mentioned to my mother about, when I think of my son, I just say, when I think of him, may you be safe. And my mother looked at me like I was talking nonsense. And I felt very embarrassed and humiliated that I had revealed a little bit of my practice to her. And I turned into the embarrassment and into the humiliation and self-suffering that, you know, I was causing for myself. It felt really bad, and it felt it eclipsed that bad feeling and understanding the heartache and the tightening inside. You know, I went there, and I detached from everything that good that happened between myself and my parents for those 2 days. And it augmented the experience of humiliation and the experiences of pleasant connection and love were diminished because I really turned toward the suffering, and it made me sad, and I didn't know whether this was what this practice is about.
So sometimes when we turn towards a difficulty that way, we need to also have some discernment about, can I actually be mindful of it? Can I actually be mindful of that without reactivity? So, you know, can I turn towards the feeling of hurt, humiliation, and know, oh, this is just hurt, this is just humiliation? Or is it, you know, does it compound? Does it actually cycle back in on itself and increase the feeling of humiliation, which it sounds a little bit like that was happening, like it was getting stronger? So that's something that we need to take care of in working with aversion, that if when we turn towards aversion, if when we turn towards it, it actually feels like it gets worse, that's not the time to be turning towards it. That there's several tools, skills for working with overwhelm or working with, you know, working with our practice, with our minds, when we feel like turning towards what's strongest in our experience actually makes it worse. So there's a few, the key piece that I've worked with there is kind of a skillful avoidance. You know, kind of recognizing, yeah, this is happening right now. Yep, there's that feeling of humiliation happening right now. And if you quickly see it's getting worse, it's like, okay, this is not the time to pay attention to this. Can I set it aside? Not to repress it. This tool of not now, which is what I call this tool for myself, the tool of not now requires not saying not now with aversion. You know, it's like, if it's like, oh, there, I can't deal with that. Oh, let me, oh, I can't deal with that, not now. If it's like that, then that's adding fuel to the fire. So kind of, can you recognize it? Yeah, there it is. And it's not so helpful right now to pay attention to that. Actually, my initial exploration of that kind of practice was, I had a conversation with the part of myself that was reacting. It's like, I see you, and I see that you're kind of, you know, struggling right now, and I also see it's not time to pay attention. So you do your thing. I'm not going to try to stop you, but I'm going to put my attention on something else. And I generally find with that kind of thing, you know, you had been doing some metta, right? You can sometimes move towards metta when there's a difficulty like that, but I've found sometimes if I try to do that, it's like that part of me that's suffering so much is going to rear up and say, wait a minute, you can't just say, oh yes, may all beings be happy when I'm feeling so miserable over here. So I've generally found moving to something neutral, helpful in that situation. Hands, sensations of hands, maybe going to the experience of hearing, going to the sensations of feet on the ground. You can try the breath, but often with a strong aversive emotional reaction, it impacts the breath. And if you turn to the breath in that situation, you're right back into it. So I found it helpful to cultivate a neutral object in my experience that I can kind of reliably go to in a place of distress. It also might be taking a walk and taking in the trees and the sky, you know, just putting yourself in a place where there's more just kind of peaceful, neutral experience coming in. So it takes discernment when we work with difficulty to know when to meet it and when to set it aside. So I'm glad you asked that question. And now we have to stop, unfortunately. So if you want to ask a question to me, I can come up afterwards. So thank you.